A dark bay or brown gelding, fold February 21st, 2000, in Kentucky. By Grand Slam, out of Regal Lady Hour, by Regal and Royal. 20 starts, 8 wins, 2 seconds, 4 thirds. Earnings, $61,687. Jockey Club name, Regal Slam. This is his story off track, as told by the woman who loved him and then became his proud owner, Katie Conway. I'm pleased to be here with Katie Conway, who I kind of feel like is my sister from another mister, as her dad is a trainer, Dan Conway. And Katie, you are in love with your off-track thoroughbreds. It's a girl after my own heart, and obviously obsessed with your dogs, whom I hear in the background now. But Katie, to start things off, just give us, from your vantage point, what it was like growing up the daughter of a trainer.
I feel completely blessed and privileged and honored to have grown up as Dan Conway's daughter. For so many reasons, you know, he's had parents who trained and were involved in hunter jumpers, and he trained, I would say, late 70s through the 80s when I was born. Late 80s, he made a very hard but noble decision to take a break from training for personal reasons. And he did everything he could to provide me with such a great childhood. And thankfully for him, he was able to get back into horse training as I was probably early teens when he started getting back into it. So it's been such a really cool ride to be along with him, and just getting to go and see all the horses every morning and help him and travel with him. It's been such a cool experience.
So you said he took a break from the track, but were horses still a part of your life as a young child?
Great question. So actually my mom, Grace, they met on the racetrack, in the 80s, and, she had always worked for a veterinarian. She's a vet tech. And, while he was, away from the track for a while, I would go in and kind of be their little assistant, ride around with the vet, get to experience that aspect of the track life. So horses were still, yes. Horse racing was still in my, you know, daily routine, and I got to see it from a different side growing up.
And when he went back to the track to train horses, what was your involvement? As you said, you were a teenager, and did you go out in the mornings? Were you kind of immersed in that type of lifestyle?
Yeah. So actually, a very dear friend of his who he trained for back in the 80s and my grandfather trained for, Mr. Daniel Burke, Oakwood Stables, he ended up reaching out to my dad. He had a couple horses that were probably, you know, they weren't going to be any type of stake or high-end allowance horse, but probably would do well at Finger Lakes, where my dad is based. It was his way of kind of slipping back into the training lifestyle. He was working for the city of Canandaigua at the time. So a friend of his old assistant, actually ended up initially starting the transition back and helping him with that transition. So I would say every weekend we would go out to the track and help with the horses. And then eventually he was able to put a few horses in his name.
So as far as you growing up and riding, you mentioned hunter jumpers. Had you had ponies and everything like that? Or was the hunter jumper or even the show world something you started later in life?
It was actually something I started later. I'm not the most confident of riders. You know, growing up, I played basketball and soccer, and I would say backyard riding lessons at a local barn. And when I was able to, I would ride the track pony on occasion. But actually, it wasn't until Regal Slam, a horse that I think we're going to talk about, he retired and he actually started the whole eventing world. He, you know, we joined the eventing world together, I'm trying to say.
So, I mean, taking a horse off the track is a fairly daunting, you know, proposition because, I mean, let's face it, thoroughbreds are multi-talented. They can pretty much do anything that you retrain them or that they put their mind to. But I mean, look, I had my first off-track thoroughbred when I was 11, and he scared the crap out of me until I started galloping racehorses. Then he seemed like a piece of cake. So what kind of got your confidence up to take a horse off the track?
Oh, well, a very special horse named Regal Slam. He was one in a million, and they're truly – if there is another Regal Slam out there, I would love to meet him or her someday, but I don't know if I'll ever have a connection like I did with Regal. And yes, I would not recommend a beginner, somebody who hasn't showed all of her life, you know, to take an off-track thoroughbred. Definitely get a trainer. Definitely work with experienced horsemen and women. But yes, it was an incredible experience. He taught me so much.
So go back to when he was in your dad's barn. What was he like to be around at the track?
Sure. So funny story, as a two-year-old, from my understanding, he was training with Michael Metz down at his training center, and he was very slow, didn't have much interest, but Mr. Burke, it was his homebred, and he, you know, that was one of the reasons he came up to us. He was slow, he was crooked, he had poor conformation, so as soon as I met him, he came off the big shipping van, and he just had such a gentle, calming presence about him. I literally didn't know what I was doing, even at the track, you know, as far as walking a horse, you know, cooling out a horse, leading a horse to the track, putting bandages on, hosing legs, you know, every little detail I learned on him. He was just a very good guy, a solid citizen.
So your connection with him goes back to when he first came on the track. I mean, this is a lifelong relationship that you have with him.
Yes, yes. He actually came up to a farm. I believe it was either early spring or over the winter. I know I remember the day like it was yesterday. It was snowing, and I let him off the van, and then we ended up bringing him to the track, and he ran in my dad's, not my now dad, you know, his assistant. He ended up running in his name for a while and training in his name. But yes, I was with him from the very beginning.
How long of a career did he have on the racetrack with you guys?
He definitely came with limitations. I believe, raced a total of 12 times. He didn't have, he didn't race all year, every year.
Well, and that's because he primarily raced at Finger Lakes, which is seasonal. You start in May and go through October. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm looking at his PPs now. He made one start outside of Finger Lakes, and that was actually in Canada at Fort Erie.
Yeah, he actually ran twice in Canada. I think was second, just got beat, and then he won. And I remember his win in Canada because I was actually in math class. I was in high school, and we only had flip phones. So I'm sneaking, looking at my phone, and the teacher caught me because I'm waiting to get a text saying how he did. And the teacher caught me and took my phone away. So I remember that win well.
That's so great. Yeah. What did we ever do when we had flip phones? We couldn't just, hop on our Naira Betts account or whatever and then watch races live. But I am looking at his PPs now. And so he won eight times. throughout his career, which out of the 20 starts was it's pretty darn good. I mean, that's a pretty high percentage as well. So, and I think, you know, with your dad and for me kind of knowing him and the few horses that he's run at NYRA, he really takes that hands-on caring approach, giving horses time and patience. And do you think that kind of parlayed over to why Regal Slam kind of, you know, lasted on the track as he did, but also lasted for you?
Absolutely. The sad reason why he had to retire later on in life from eventing and even being ridden was a degenerative disease. He suffered from a DSLD, so it's a degenerative ligament disease where their fetlocks drop and they don't have that support. But I truly do think, looking back on his career, you know, my dad is one of the most hands-on trainers I've ever met or known. And I think I think every horse deserves that in their life, in their racing career.
Well, and deserves someone like you too. Let's start at the beginning of his second career. Did you have a nickname for him, by the way?
Regal. Regal. Yeah. Captain Simple.
So Regal comes off the track. What did you do with him? Did you turn him out or did you go directly into working?
So, a friend of ours, Lisa Reed, who I actually have my horses with still to this day. She's an incredible horsewoman. She gallops at the racetrack as well, owns and breeds and events. So eventing wasn't my, anything I desired to do, really. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I just knew I needed this horse to remain in my life. And we ended up bringing him out to her farm. And she didn't push me, but I think she gave me the nudge I needed to learn something new and really cool and something that he overall did well in, I would say.
That's, I remember when I first took my OTTB off the track and I was actually at a lady's, and I had only done 100 jumpers up until that point, and at a lady's farm, Linda Spear, and she was German and big into dressage, and I knew nothing about dressage, but she pointed me in that direction, and boy, my boy Colonel, he was the best thoroughbred that I've ever been around at in dressage, but But speaking of dressage, that's kind of where you have to start your basis when it comes to eventing. And I had Rosie Napravnik on before, and we talked about the three phases of eventing, obviously dressage, cross country, and jumping. What was kind of, you know, your first thing that you tackled with him?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say, going back to your previous question, though, we ended up, you know, he was turned out, the typical letdown time. I honestly just started kind of riding him around the farm, getting comfortable with him. And but things led into taking lessons with Lisa's trainer, Karen Alexander. And we did a lot of we did groundwork, which I think is so important for the horses coming off the track, just to get that bond, connect with your horse. You know, I mean, it's such a new lifestyle for them, and it's really good to get that groundwork initiated, under their belt. But I would say dressage definitely wasn't his strong point. It was hard. Collection was very hard for him. So we always got through our dressage phase, but cross country was definitely our most fun. And I think that's what we enjoyed the most, going out and jumping the cross country jumps.
Now for him, I mean, considering that you, as you mentioned, weren't, you know, a experienced rider at the time, did you guys truly have to kind of learn together?
Oh, yes. And yes, like I said before, I wouldn't recommend it for everybody. I came off a lot. And it was, until I learned that he was always going to duck out to the right, I needed to keep my right hand and leg on him. He taught me a very important lesson with that. I struggled a lot. But one thing was, he never ran away. Every time I fell off of him, he stopped. He looked at me like, get back up here. Let's try this again. So yeah, it was a long road, but you know, after a few years of working with some really talented riders, and friends, we ended up having a few really awesome years together with showing.
His biggest attribute, as far as his demeanor, I mean, you kind of alluded to it. Do you think it was his patience and his kindness?
Oh, yes. He had to be very patient with me, and I'm so thankful for that. He allowed me to just learn everything. I messed up so many times with him, and he was just kind of like this big teddy bear who said, I won't hold that to you, but you better, you know, let's do it the right way next time.
And talk about your showing career with him. I mean, I've stalked you on Facebook, and you have some great pictures of you guys going cross country. And I also, was it him that you did the demonstration at the Retired Racehorse Project?
No, I was lucky enough to have another one of my dad's horses. A group of girls invited me to be on their team with Daring Destiny. We ended up getting there to Kentucky. We did a dressage test, which that was an amazing experience. That was always one of my goals, to get to the Retired Racehorse Project. And we were able to do that. I think it was 2019. So, and now he's owned by a 14-year-old girl who just adores him. So
I want to get to that kind of side, because you've had several of your dad's horses. But getting back to Regal, like I said, talk a little bit about your show career with him, and where you guys went and what you did.
Sure. I would say, you know, we kept things pretty local up here in the Finger Lakes area in New York. We're very lucky to have GVRDC, GVH. They put on some beautiful shows and events every year. We also had Stuart Horse Trials, a recognized event up here in Victor, that was one of my goals with him. We ended up going twice and competing and placing in the ribbon. So that was a super awesome accomplishment, I'd say. But I would say my most fun that we had together was probably in 2014 and 15. We were able to get to quite a few events in those 2 years. He just, you know, we got through dressage, and that was always we'll just do our best, trudge forward, and then, go out and have just a fun time on cross country. He was very honest to the jump. Every jump I put him towards, the only thing he actually ever had an issue with, were ditches.
but
I know that was the only thing I really had to sit way back, kick, remind him on his shoulder, hey, come on, let's get over this. And
we'll get over it, I promise.
Yeah, come on, we can do this. Let's go over together. we never did anything past beginner novice. We would school some novice jumps, but he was happy at that level. I was happy, and he exceeded all of my expectations.
What for you, he was your first horse, and he kind of opened the door for you, at least from what you said and kind of following you and stuff throughout the, you know, since I've known you and your dad for like 10 years, that he kind of opened the door for you to kind of be this ambassador and find homes for your dad's horses when, you know, it was time to call it quits. Did he instill a kind of passion in you to do such?
Absolutely, 100%. And I will say, like I said earlier, I watched your interview with, or I listened to your interview with Rosie, and you had mentioned, you know, or back in the day when I was working with Regal on the racetrack, and we were just kind of transitioning into his second career, off-track thoroughbred the off-track thoroughbred really wasn't, or maybe just beginning to be kind of what it is today. And so it really, it was the beginning of my passion to rehome these wonderful animals and seeing them just excel after they work so hard for us on the racetrack is so, so incredibly rewarding.
Yeah, I was starting to get annoyed with, you know, people saying that, you know, all the warm bloods, you need a warm blood.
Exactly. But
thank you for that. Thank you for recognizing, you know, what they have to offer to everybody. And for, and not to bring up, you know, a sad thing, but obviously you mentioned Regal Slam's degenerative ligament disease. When did you have to call it quits? How hard of a decision for you was that?
Yeah, probably the hardest decision of my entire life so far. He started to just not go like his normal self. And I just, in the back of my mind, you know, people would say, oh, well, you know, maybe it's his stifles, maybe it's his hocks, maybe, you know, something's there. I mean, he is getting older. But I just, in my gut, I had a feeling that it was something worse than that. So we finally, after some rides where he was just stumbling and just not comfortable behind, we had my vet out, and he worked with, looked at the x-ray. We took x-rays, looked at the x-rays with our farrier. And it was then determined that this wasn't going to get better. And as soon as we made that, we discovered what was wrong. I never rode him ever again, obviously. With working with our vet and farrier, we just tried to keep him as comfortable as possible. Lisa, God bless her. She made him this smaller enclosure that kind of walked. It was just a walk-in stall to out to a smaller pen, just so he could continue, you know, to stay comfortable and limber. But after I would say about a year, we were getting closer into winter. I knew that he didn't deserve to go out with, you know, without dignity. He deserved every bit of that. So we made that very difficult decision. And we put him to sleep. And I still get emotional to this day. I think about him and I can tear up. I was just thinking about him. So,
well, it just speaks to the fact of how special he was to you. I always have to tell myself, you know, we've all been there before as far as losing horses, and you have to remember the fun times, what they taught you, and that you gave them such a wonderful life. And or at least you hope you did.
Yeah.
But I can certainly say that I think you did that for Regal.
Thank you.
But he also made, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but it feels like he kind of put that, as I said, passion into you to rehome other horses, and you now have two other horses now as well, the Zipfer and Preternatural, who was just racing on the Naira circuit.
Yes. I still don't even know how I ended up with him. He was running for Dominic Chitino in New York, and thank the Lord he was sent up to us. And due to COVID, I was limited to how much I could really go out and spend, you know, some time with the horses. But, you know, my dad, after he ran a couple times, I think he hit the board every time he ran up here, just a few times. He came back just, you know, slightly uncomfortable after a morning breeze. And my dad said, well, he's too special to, you know, have anything happen to him. So, I kind of just said, okay, I'm kind of taking this horse. We have a weird connection. It's not like anything. It wasn't like a Regal Slam where I spent a ton of time with him. It wasn't like the Zipster where we also had such a relationship on the racetrack. But there was something definitely special about him, and I'm having a ton of fun with him right now.
Oh, good. And the Zipster, I mean, he raced until he was 9.
He did.
And, you know, I noticed that he was claimed from your dad, right?
Yes.
Did you go back and get him?
Long story short, I'll keep the emotions out of it, but
emotions on this.
You know, we were only going to run him one or two times. First horse that I actually I was listed as a part owner, and so I remember dolling him all up for his race that day, and led him over. I think he finished maybe 3rd, I want to say. And then I went to get him after the race, and they said, he was claimed. You need to go, you know, to the test barn and do all that stuff. And I just remember sobbing the whole walk back, and I'm like in shock. I'm like, I can't believe he got claimed. But long story short, thankfully we did get him back. And actually, at the time I still had my very old Appaloosa 2 socks and Regal. So I really didn't have a need to have a third horse. And we found just a wonderful family in Canada. He lived at this beautiful farm, was kind of everybody's horse, it sounded like. Everybody just kind of rode him all around and had fun with him. But then he ended up needing a home. And that was actually right when we were making the decision to put Regal to sleep. So Zipster came in, saved the day when I needed just a buddy to be with. So.
And is he that just kind of horse? Just that, I mean, just looking at pictures of him, he just seems like the happy-go-lucky kind of dude.
Oh yeah. He's such a clown. When you're having a bad day, just go hang with a Zipster. He finds things to spook at. He's definitely not a beginner horse, but he's always looking for treats and just attention. And yeah, he's going to be with me forever too.
Collecting horses.
I am.
So getting back to Regal, I always like to ask people, as you listen to Rosie, kind of just short answer questions about Regal. And if you want to throw the Zipster or Pax, as you call Predator Natural, you know, their thoughts on these questions as well, feel free to. But as far as Regal was concerned, what was his favorite treat? Was he a peppermint guy, or did he like apples, or what was his, you know, favorite mange?
I would say he loved carrots, apples, peppermints, but peppermints were his thing. Yeah. For sure. Yes. If he left the bag of peppermints by his stall, he would try to eat them with the wrappers on. Yeah.
Had a few of those in my time as well.
Yeah.
If he had a theme song, what would it be?
Oh gosh. I would say, You've Got a Friend in Me, as silly as it sounds, the Toy Story theme song, just because he was such a special friend. And he was really everybody's friend. He made everybody smile and feel loved.
That's very sweet. If he were a person and you were sitting down to have cocktails, what would his drink of choice be?
I love it. Oh gosh. I think he would definitely be a dark beer kind of guy. Maybe a stout.
Okay. What was his most favorite thing to do?
We had so much fun trail riding. We have a beautiful park about a half hour from the farm, and they have this huge pond. So we would go over there, Menden Ponds Park, we would go over there quite a bit, ride the trails, and then we would let them go play in the water. And he was such a gentleman. He never laid down in the water, but he did splash a ton, and you could just tell he was loving every second of it.
Oh, that's great. Okay, now on the flip side, what did he not like to do? What was his least favorite thing to do when you guys were riding or just around the barn?
Dressage, I would say.
Oh, come on. Breaking my heart. No,
I know. He would grind his teeth so bad. And we would have that written on all of our dressage tests, you know. It was him, and we got through it.
I don't understand why the judges have such a like pet peeve about that. Cause my horse didn't do it, but I had friends that would show and they'd be like, oh, they wrote grinding teeth again.
He had the most, because he did that so often, he had the most defined jaw muscles. My trainer, Karen, would always say, I just love his jaw muscles. They're so defined.
That's sexy on a horse. Yeah. Okay. What was the biggest lesson that he taught you?
Oh, gosh. I would say just be a great friend. If somebody is going through, you know, really anything, just help them through it. And we can all learn a lesson from each other. And he provided me with so much support through so many times. So I would say just be a good friend and just be a good being.
Good listener too.
Yes,
horses are the best listeners for sure.
Yes.
Okay, and then the best three words to describe him, to sum him up.
I would say classy, friend, and teacher.
Perfect. Well, I love it. Katie, thank you so much for sharing Regal's story with us. He sounded like just an absolute gem.
Thank you, Maggie. It's been such an honor talking with you about him. It really has.
Everyone, thanks for listening to this week's episode of Off Track. I really enjoyed talking with Katie Conway, and I think it came across that she has a heart of gold, and the affection that she has for her Off Track thoroughbreds is tangible, especially for her boy Regal Slam. And I love what she said about what he had taught her, and that was to be a better friend. And it got me thinking about what my first Off Track thoroughbred, Colonel Hill, taught me, and that was to be a better listener, whether to people or to horses, but to them in particular, because let's face it, they can't talk to us in the traditional sense. So we always have to be listening to their cues, to their wants and their needs. And also the one thing that we always can do for them is support them after their racing careers are over, and the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, for those that can't go on to those second careers, provides that lifelong sanctuary for them. And if you want to help out in any way possible, make sure you check out trfinc.org/offtrack to donate.